From Vermont Public Radio, this is The Frequency. I'm Henry Epp.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne.
This podcast is something new that we're doing at VPR. We've got the news of the day, plus feature stories and interviews from VPR's team of reporters.
This is material we typically air on the radio, but this is not the radio. It's a podcast. So you can download it and listen in the car, as you're walking your dog, or maybe milking your cows.
Or while staying home, as many of us are doing right now.
A new episode will come out every morning, Monday through Friday.
It's Wednesday, April 1st. Coming up, the National Guard sets up temporary clinics in case local hospitals get overwhelmed by COVID-19 patients in the coming weeks.
If you were to go out there right now, you would see a variety of military tents, some generators, some climate control. You would see, if you were to go inside, you would see stretchers and patient beds.
But first, here are some headlines we're following today.
On Tuesday, Vermont saw its largest increase in COVID-19 cases in a single day so far.
There are now 293 cases of the disease. That's an increase of 37 from the day before.
13 people have died, and at least 7 of those deaths are from an outbreak at Burlington Health and Rehab.
The health department is tracking another outbreak at a senior housing complex in Essex Junction.
Also worth noting, the health department says 21 people are currently hospitalized with COVID-19, but there are also 52 people who are in hospitals who the department says are, quote, under investigation for COVID-19.
In other news, Vermont Attorney General T.J. Donovan says he will not prosecute 2 state troopers who shot at a man in Bristol back in December.
Trooper Robert Helm and Trooper Matthew Hood both fired on a man named Greg West after he allegedly pointed a shotgun in their direction. West survived the shooting.
The Attorney General says his office concluded the officer's actions were justified. Criminal charges against West are still pending.
And State Treasurer Beth Pierce says Vermont's pension funds took a hit from the recent drop in the stock market. But Pierce says the state takes the long view when it invests state employees and state teachers' retirement funds.
Treasurer Pierce says she's confident the state will meet all of its obligations to people with state pensions.
So, Anna, we've heard about places around the world that have been hit with more sick people than their hospitals can handle during this pandemic.
And as the number of confirmed cases of COVID-19 rises in Vermont, Governor Phil Scott says he's worried about a bed shortage here, too.
And so to boost healthcare capacity across the state, he's activated the Vermont National Guard. As Peter Hirschfeld reports, Vermont's citizen soldiers are now fighting an entirely new kind of battle.
It's so lady.
Who is not this bad? Because you've got a pin cushion.
A dozen or so combat medics sit at 2 tables in an Army National Guard armory in Winooski, and Private Sophia Parker seems entirely unfazed that her outstretched forearm is streaked with her own blood.
How many times have you been stuck today?
I think like 4.
Do you eventually run out of veins here for people to train on?
Probably after a little while I would have, but it's all good. I have pretty easy veins for people to work on, and it doesn't bother me, so...
Last week, these guard members were going about their regular lives and working in their civilian jobs. Today, they're sticking each other with IV needles to fine-tune their vein-finding skills in advance of their latest mission. Major Joseph Fallon has been overseeing their preparations since last Monday morning.
They're practicing IVs, which is something that UVM asked us to be prepared to do. So,
Fallon and his unit have also been constructing a mobile clinic in which these combat medics may be asked to serve.
If you were to go out there right now, you would see a variety of military tents, some generators, some climate control. You would see, if you were to go inside, you would see stretchers and patient beds.
That clinic is in a parking lot outside the emergency department at the University of Vermont Medical Center in Burlington. And when I arrive there a little before noon, a team of hospital workers is running through a last-minute checklist before this mobile clinic goes live. Dawn LeBaron is the hospital's vice president of facilities.
Can you tell folks what we're looking at here?
Yeah, this is a triage area for to respond to the COVID-19 rush that we expect or want to be anticipating to handle.
There's a series of patient intake units that look like small shipping containers, and then some tan and green tents on wood platforms where healthcare workers will administer care. The idea, LeBaron says, is to care for patients who would normally go to the emergency department so that ER doctors can focus on critical cases of COVID-19.
It's a statewide plan, part of a statewide plan to be able to accommodate the demand that would be coming into the inpatient facilities. So this would be treated much like just another patient care unit for the UVM Medical Center.
LeBaron has been on this job for more than 20 years.
And if you're going to ask me if I've ever seen anything like this, the answer is no.
But she says lessons learned during previous epidemics, like SARS in 2003 and MERS in 2012, have informed the hospital's approach to COVID-19.
We did not have to go back and reinvent the wheel and create these plans. We had to put them on steroids, if you will, and really fast forward them.
Those plans also include overflow capacity for hospitals at an auditorium in Barrie, an athletic facility in St. Albans, and at Patrick Gym in Burlington, where VPR digital producer Elodie Reed and I met up with Lieutenant Alexander Tucci of the Vermont National Guard.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Alex, I'd shake hands. But
yeah, of course.
Tucci leads us onto the home court for the UVM men's and women's basketball teams, but the place bears little resemblance to an athletic facility now. The court is covered in dark green rubber matting, and 50 cots are spaced evenly across the expanse.
Well, I understand it's going to be people that are being tested for COVID-19, are awaiting results, and then if they are tested positive, they'll be moved to what will be a negative pressure tent, kind of like a portable ICU, and then moved via ambulance to UVM.
Guard members have been prepping the gym for patients for about a week now. Tucci says he hopes they never have to use it. But he says in these disorienting times, it's been nice to have a sense of purpose.
In a situation like this where no one really knows what's, you know, what the future holds, it's really nice to be able to get up every day and contribute something.
An official at Vermont's COVID-19 Emergency Operations Center in Waterbury says the state is planning for overflow beds in other parts of the state as well. For VPR News, I'm Peter Hirschfeld.
As the number of COVID-19 cases goes up in Vermont, the state is trying to get more medical equipment from the federal government, things like ventilators, masks, gowns, and other supplies for patients and medical workers.
Are there any people here in Vermont working to make this stuff for hospitals?
Yeah, there are a few different efforts, and one is at Generator, which is a makerspace in Burlington. They have things like laser cutters and 3D printers, and they typically let their members use those machines to make all kinds of different things. But now they're using them to make prototypes of face shields and other protective equipment, and they're talking with UVM Medical Center about possibly supplying some of these things to the hospital for medical workers who could use them while treating COVID-19 patients. And so, Anna, I talked with their executive director, Meg Hammond, yesterday, and I started our conversation by asking her about how exactly they're making these prototypes.
Currently, we just went into a very small, what I'm calling a boutique manufacturing production. We have four employees working in an 11,000 square foot building, safely distanced and working with gloves and protective gear themselves. They're working on a design that Jake Blend took from many open sources and then tailored in Generator for a face shield. The face shield is intended to go over a nurse or a doctor's head. It is adjustable for all sizes. It comes with a headband and a plastic visor and is put together with a few snaps and an elastic band.
And how quickly can Generator and other makerspaces be producing this equipment for potential use in hospitals?
We're still getting a little bit of an answer on that. I mean, we're at Generator, we have two laser cutters. They are high-end laser cutters, and we have about five 3D printers. We're also working with Beta, who has a print farm, and Beta Technologies, that is, and they have about 10 printers. It takes somewhere around an hour, hour and a half to have a headband printed. So I think, you know, in a day we could probably produce 100, but we're still working out the kinks in how many we can finish products that we can produce, as well as considering going into fulfillment so we could package these things safely and considering all of our own sanitary practices.
Yeah. So how, I mean, does that potentially, you know, if you were working in normal circumstances where people didn't have to be socially distanced, I assume that those circumstances sort of change what you're able to produce.
Absolutely. And, you know, keep in mind, generator is a makerspace. We have tools that people are sharing, mostly sharing their expertise, their ideas, their creations, inventions. We're not set up like a factory. So we're trying to act like a mini factory right now, but we don't have all the shortcuts that would allow this process to go extremely fast. But what we are doing is getting very close to putting some equipment in the hands of the people that are most at need right now, who are bravely on the front lines.
And of course, this is also happening at different scales, you know, across the country. I mean, how helpful can makerspaces like Generator be in terms of your ability to produce PPE and get it into the hands of hospitals like UVM?
I think that we all know at this point, the need is urgent. And if you know somebody that's working at a hospital or a medical center, I'm sure they'll let you know that they are urgently wanting this critical PPE. And so I think makerspaces can make a difference right now. There are a lot of steps. You know, everyone says the devil's in the details here, and it's true. We're working night and day, a large team of us, making sure that everything is really safe and making sure that it is something that's going to help the people in the medical industry. And so there's a lot of things to consider.
Meg Hammond is the executive director of Generator, a makerspace in Burlington's South End. Meg, thanks so much for speaking with me.
Thank you very much.
All right, so I want to completely change gears here. Henry, if you have bird feeders up, you might want to take them down.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Well, we're all stuck inside. Bears are starting to come out of hibernation, and they're hungry. Vermont Fish and Wildlife warns that if these bears smell birdseed or suet in your backyard, they might pay you a visit. Same goes for garbage, pet food, and barbecue grills stored outside.
Okay, noted. Now, a quick look at the Eye on the Sky forecast for today. It'll be partly to mostly cloudy around the region, and highs will range through the 40s, depending on where you are.
And we should probably tell you a little bit more about who we are.
Yeah, so I host All Things Considered on VPR. That's the afternoon news program from 4 to 6:30. And I've been a reporter and host here for a couple years. Anna, you're a little bit newer to VPR. You just started last summer.
Yeah, I started as an intern last summer. Thanks for hiring me, Henry. And I came back over the winter when I was on break from school. And now that I'm back in Vermont, I am working for VPR as an official employee making this podcast.
And this podcast is just getting started, and we're still experimenting with how it sounds.
So we'd love to hear feedback from you about what you think.
And Anna, we've done a couple demo episodes of these, not for the public, and I understand you've actually been getting some feedback already on those.
Yes, because we aren't really able to go anywhere right now, I gathered my family into the living room and played a couple episodes for them. And this is what my parents thought.
That microphone is a little close.
Can you please ask a question?
I just asked it.
Oh, the podcast, yeah.
You don't always want to hear the news when it's on.
I think it's a perfect format to have accessibility to what's going on.
And I would listen to it even if I wasn't your mom.
Well, Anna, that is a ringing endorsement. I'm glad we have at least two listeners on board so far.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency. This episode featured reporting from Peter Hirschfeld, Bob Kinzel, and Amy Noyes.
Music by Blue Dot Sessions, digital support from Noah Cutter, engineering from John Billingsley, and our executive producer is Mark Davis. I'm Henry Epp.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. Talk to you tomorrow.
Well, Anna, it sounds like you have very supportive parents.
You cannot say that.